Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 149. This one's going to be called Arlington Field of Honor, and the reason it's called that is because back on February 10th, we laid my uncle's, cremated remains were finally put to rest at Arlington National Cemetery, and I'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. But right now it's the week of, February 20th, 2012, and I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe. And this is a podcast about distance running, all things running. Sometimes I throw in some other stuff there. I'm going to talk a little bit about our experience up at the Arlington National Cemetery. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about long distance insanity and hit on the email bag early in the show, because most of the content of the show is going to be referenced to some of the emails I got, especially one from my friend Ashland Tom about necessary suffering versus non-necessary suffering and the rewards from the necessary suffering. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But first I want to talk about Arlington. If you're not familiar with Arlington National Cemetery, it's a cemetery in Northern Virginia that is pretty much right along Washington, D.C., and it's where a lot of people are buried, mostly our war dead heroes and whatnot. It's the where the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is, where the old guard keeps watch 24 hours a day, 365, and it's also the JFK Eternal Flame is up there. For the first time, I was up there for a funeral, and my uncle, his name was Joe, who was a World War II veteran in the Navy. He qualified to be buried at Arlington, and he had, considered full military honors. I mean, there was a Navy band, a seven-gun salute, flag was presented to. My uncle never married. He was a lifelong bachelor, was almost a priest. I think he was in a seminary for a while. He died at age 95 last October. That's when we had the actual funeral, and his remains were cremated. And then my mother had already been arranging for him to be laid to rest up at Arlington in the columbarium. But it was quite a ceremony, very moving, very honorable. You know, military is a full, full Navy band outside the chapel. We were at Memorial Chapel or old. There's two chapels up there. I remember when we had to go through security, they asked us which one we were going to, and I didn't know. I think we went to, it's called Old Post Chapel. I had a ceremony in there. I got to be one of the readers, and then the Navy band was outside the chapel, all standing at attention. There was his remains were put in what's called a caisson, which is the flag draped coffin with the six horses. And we came out of the chapel, and the band preceded the funeral procession, and then we all followed in our cars. And it was, of course, a color guard, and it was just an incredible experience, and what a way to honor, one of our World War II veterans, especially when you're just a few feet away from the rear admiral who presented my. The oldest surviving sibling in the family on my mom's side, my Aunt Frankie, she was presented the flag from, I don't know what the gentleman's name was, but he was a rear admiral, and he said on behalf of the President of the United States. I mean, that was just a pretty, pretty incredible thing to hear, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful ceremony. It's something I'll never forget, and it was a very good way to honor my uncle who was in the war. I had another uncle who was in the war, but he was a airplane mechanic, and he was in the Air Force, but he did not, I don't think he really had rank, but my uncle was a lieutenant commander, and he was kind of a surrogate grandfather to me, because my mother's parents were so old, were elderly even when I was a child. So my Uncle Joe, who lived up in D.C. most of his life, kind of filled that role as kind of the older, he was my mom's oldest brother, my mom's the youngest in the family. So, that's what they call Arlington, Field of Honor, and it was just quite a ceremony. It's kind of hard to describe. I could go on and on about it, but this is a podcast about running, And but anyway, Digger, if you listen to the podcast, then I'm sure you've been to ceremonies such as that, and I'm sure it wasn't much different, being that you were in the Navy. So, or I think it was the Marines. No, you were in the Navy. So, anyway, one couple funny things happened, or one thing did. I, of course, wore a suit, and I forgot to bring some collar stays, and I didn't realize that until the morning of, or getting dressed, and the particular shirt that I had, the collar will fly up if I don't have the stays in there, and I was really mad about that because I had, you know, my best suit and that I was up there. Then I realized that if I used the coffee stirrers and broke those in half and stuck them in there, the coffee stirrers from, they were wooden, from the little coffee setup in the hotel room, and those worked just fine. So if you ever find any gentlemen out there, all you gents, if you find yourself without, forget your college stays when you go on an out-of-town trip or something, you can always use wooden coffee stirrers. All right, I want to get to Tom's email, and it's kind of, let's see here, I'm gonna kind of pull it up right here. What he did is Tom gave me a couple race reports, and but I'm gonna talk about that in a little bit. He said this is part of Tom's email. I'm gonna kind of read it. This is about suffering versus necessary suffering versus non-necessary suffering, and it's a little bit about the it has a little bit to do with this kind of long distance insanity that I've been dealing with here lately. And when I say insanity, I don't mean true insanity. I'm just saying, you know, the mileage I've been doing for my ability level has been insane. And I'll go through that here in a minute. I'll go over my weekly mileage going back to mid-November just to kind of give you an idea. But Tom kind of hit in his email, kind of hit it right on the nose. And this is a part of his email quoted. I was up late one night flipping through the channels and happened to stop on a priest giving a speech on suffering. He was quoting some psychologist who said there are two different kinds of suffering, necessary and non-necessary. He went on to say that a lot of suffering is non-necessary. In other words, we choose to suffer. If someone cuts you off in traffic or someone says something to piss you off, you choose to suffer if you let it get to you. This is non-necessary suffering. Then he talked to this priest, talked about a certain type of non-necessary suffering, which he called beautiful suffering. This is like childbirth suffering. This is like childbirth suffering. There is suffering, but the result is something beautiful. Tom writes that it hit me that running an ultra is beautiful suffering. The physical and mental suffering that goes on during the run vanishes into a beautiful finish and memories that you can carry with you and share with others. Anyway, he said he didn't know if he did the priest justice in his email, but he thought it made a lot of sense, at least late at night. And so I want to talk about that just for a few minutes. I'm just going to use the term long distance running as opposed to running ultras because, you know, for people of different ability levels, clearly, you know, a 10K is the longest they can do, or a 5K or a half marathon or a marathon. So you just kind of fill in the blank for whatever your distance level ability is. But for me, I've gotten to the point where I can cover marathon distance, not fast, but I can cover it with relative ease. And what I mean is, for example, I just did a 25 miler on Saturday as a training run, and that's, you know, almost the marathon distance, and it was tough, but I made it through, and I did the last part of it by myself. And I refer to the ultra distance as beautiful suffering, and I think the reason I wanted to talk about this in the podcast is because I think that's why finishing those events has so much intrinsic reward. It's because of the beautiful suffering that you do to get there, and the sacrifices you make, and the physical challenge and the mental challenge is so hard, and you're the only one that can do it. There's no corner to cut. There's no magic pills. There's you know, nothing that's going to pull you along the way except your own willpower. Now, you'll have people that'll help you, you know, give you supplies, encourage you. But really, you tend to do it all on your own. Nobody puts one foot in front of the other for you except for yourself. And that's why Tom wrote in his email, it's the beautiful, beautiful finish. The suffering vanishes into a beautiful finish and memories that you can carry with you and share with others. And I think that is so true. for finishing long distance events or adventures like that. I wish you had told me what channel that was so I could try to find that speech and listen to it, because that's a concept that I'm kind of going through it now as I'm talking in the podcast. I haven't really thought it out because I kind of wanted just to do it on the fly as I was thinking about it. But I think it is so applicable to distance running and ultra running, because you really do hurt. I mean, it's, experiencing pain is part of the sport, and learning how and being able to adapt to it and transcend through it. That's part of the sport. You know, experiencing an injury, you know, purposely is not part of the sport. I mean, hurting yourself is not part of the sport on purpose, but experiencing the pain and being able to transcend that is part of the sport. And so that's, to me, that's the necessary, this is the necessary suffering, or beautiful suffering. Things really aren't, I guess the things that mean the most to us are the things we work the hardest for. And I've been, at least for me, you know, the last several episodes of this podcast have really been all about this 100K that I'm planning on running on March 10th. And I got to do a major shout out to Chris at the Running After Daylight blog down in Georgia. He just finished the Iron Horse 100K down. Incredible. That was his redemption run. And I'm going to encourage you to go to his blog and read his race report once he gets it up there. It's just search Running After Daylight, and you'll find his blog. His name's Chris. He just sent me an email earlier today and gave me some advice. You know, he's been there. He was looking for redemption, and he went down there, and he finished the 100K. And that really, really gives me a lot of mental strength going into my race, knowing that someone I've been communicating with over email and the guy that listens to the podcast is encouraging me, and he just did it. And so that really, it really means a lot. Chris, I really appreciate you sending that email. I can't wait to read your full race report. I really can't. So hopefully you get it up soon. So I've been working really hard to get to the starting line of this 100K without injury. I had a very, very good 50K run down in Charlotte a couple weeks back. That was in episode 148. What am I on now? 149. So that was 148. If you haven't listened to that one, listen to that one before this one. I did more of a race during that event. I didn't plan to. It was just kind of the way it happened. But that was a 31-mile training run, and then 2 weeks later, I did a 25-mile. So let me just kind of go over my mileage, my weekly mileage, stretching back to mid-November, and I'll kind of do this quick because I don't want to bore you, but if you're not bored already. 50 miles this past week. That's, again, another milestone. I've only cleared the 50-mile mark a couple times in my, weekly for weekly miles a couple times in my whole life. So that was really a big week for me. I did 7.57, 25, and then 6. And let me just talk about that for a minute, because Friday, before the 25 mile, I went bowling, and that was a major mistake, major, major mistake. I've only been bowling probably 4 times in my life, and not only did I think I kind of strained the muscles in my left hand, I was feeling some pain while I was bowling, in my right, butt cheek. Is that the piriformis? My wife always talks about her piriformis hurting. So, it never really went away during the 25 mile, and it hurt even more on Sunday. So I probably strained that bowling. And I actually have a lot more respect for people that bowl regularly and don't get up and hurt. My shoulder didn't hurt this time, but it was my hand and my butt cheek. All right, so that was 50 miles. Week before that, 35. Week before that, had bronchitis, and all I ran was the 50K. Going back, these are weekly, this is weekly mileage. 40, 31.1, 40, 47.2, 51, 40.1, 47.8, 47.8, 45.3, 35, 46, 44, 45, 44, 45. And that goes all the way back to mid-November. So I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, looks like 14 or 15 weeks there. That's almost 4 months of 40-plus miles every week. I maxed out when I was marathon training at 35, I think was the highest mileage I did. So I'm up in a different level now for my ability, my ability level, and I'm not injured. I feel like I'm going to be ready for this 100K. At least I think I'm going to deserve a place at the starting line. I really do. And I couldn't be more pleased with my training except for the time I had bronchitis. And I think that was the only week I didn't do the runs because it just felt awful. And I think there was one other week there where I missed one run just because of life. It's very difficult to do this kind of mileage when you have a full-time job. The folks that train even harder and longer, my hat is totally off to you. It really is. I call this kind of long-distance insanity. You know, inside the mind of a regular, aspiring ultra runner who works, has a family. You know, I have plenty of interests outside of running. Obviously, this podcast is kind of a hobby. But this is something I haven't really mentioned that much, but I'll have a commercial at the end of the podcast. I'm race directing the Ashland Railroad Run again this year, the 10K here in town that also has a 5K fun run and a 1 mile kids race that brings in several hundred runners each year. And this is the 34th running, no pun intended, of the Ashland Railroad Run. And I'm actually co-race directing it with Rodney's wife, Tamara, again, and I mentioned that a lot last year, and the reason I haven't really talked about it this time around is because I've been focusing so much in the podcast, I guess, on talking about my training. But that's an interest outside of running. It's basically organizing a town event, and you don't want to screw it up and embarrass yourself or embarrass the town because we have a lot of people that come up here. It's kind of there are people that come up and have done this thing for years. So I have interest outside of running, and I'm trying to do all of that and train for this 100K to fulfill my selfish goal. And that's really what it is, that when you get to distance running to the point of just not just marathon training, but where you're gone 5 hours on a Saturday morning, whereas back when I was doing marathon training, you might do 220 milers. I'm routinely gone for 4 hours on Saturday mornings, and that's why I start my runs as early as I can so I can get back and do that lying around thing and then be functional in the afternoon. This past Saturday when I did my 25 miler, we had casino night at our church that night, which is a huge party. The casino night at the church where I go, which is St. Anne's Catholic Church here in town, is a big casino night event. A lot of people have them around here, but ours is a lot of fun. And my wife was the food coordinator, so that means I'm kind of an errand boy. And, I had to be ready for that. So I had a really full day on Saturday. I started at 6 a.m. on Saturday to get all my mileage in so I'd have some time to relax in the afternoon before my legs all stiffened up. And it was nice because I was able to get out there with Rodney and Tom. And I think we did 8 or 9 before Tom's wife came. And then they run a faster pace once she shows up because I do my run-walk interval so I can stay alive out there. But the ultra running is a total selfish sport, and to an extent. I mean, you talk all these people in the company. Like, I've got three people on my crew, Rodney, Ashland Bob, and Ashland Tom, and they're coming down to the Outer Banks all for me. And then I've told my family I want them there at the finish line, which will be in the morning. And then I think Ashland Bob's family is going to be going because he has access to a house kind of at the halfway point. And so all this is all about me. it's just it's a very selfish, self-driven sport. And you need people to kind of do it your way. It's not a, that's what I've found. And sometimes I feel some guilt about that. I don't know if any of the listeners out there ever feel that, but, sometimes I do feel like I ask too much of people when I've done some of these ultra marathons. But I've kind of given back too. I've helped out other runners, totally given them all of my time to make their experience as best as it can. And I guess it's kind of, you pay it forward and, people reciprocate because they feel like they want to be a part of your experience as well. Like the time I crewed for Tom and the time I crewed for Rodney, I felt, as a part of that experience, I guess, they're the ones that cover the mileage, but, I was kind of there every step of the way that I could, except for Tom's Mountain Masochist run. I was only at the finish line on that, but it's I don't know, it's just kind of a perspective I've had, and I wanted to put some of that information out in the podcast because it's something that I've found, and I'm just kind of curious if any other listeners out there have felt kind of that same guilt that it's a selfish sport at times because you spend so much, you demand so much of other people to allow you to be out there and have that training time. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm not really clear. Anyway, if you got any comments on that, just hit me up at ashlanddave@gmail.com. Okay, well, let's get to some of the other emails here. That was the whole point of going to the email bag first. And got some great, let's see. He gave Chris's three good pieces of advice for finishing his 100K. And I'm literally emailing him right now as I'm doing the show. Begin eating as soon as the race begins. At least need to get about 275 calories an hour every hour. Don't skimp on this one. Hydrate and take your sodium every 30 minutes or so. You got to have an idea when to take your S caps. And I need to reorder some. So, Chris, I appreciate that advice. And deal with foot issues as soon as you notice them. Have a blister kit, extra socks. Know how to use everything. This is the key to finishing. And, Chris, that is really going to be the biggest thing for me because my feet are tender. They're not. That's not my one of my strengths. I do have weak skin on my feet, but I'm blister free right now. That little blister time I had several weeks back is all over with. And then number four, Chris says, is relentless forward progress. So yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate that. And I'll be sending you some other emails here, asking some other questions. Can't wait to read your report. Let's see. The next one, heard from Sean in Paso Robles, California. Just wanted to drop a note and say thanks for another great podcast. He was commenting on the one about the 50K. And when I read his email, I laughed out loud. And so I want to quote this quote. Today I listened to it while I was out on a run, and at first I thought for sure you were going to bail on the ultra because of your bronchitis. Then to hear you shut up anyway, and then a personal best. Wow, that's so cool. And then he goes on to just say about how Tim made the 50 miles go by real quickly. Thanks, Sean, for the email. I really appreciate that. It's nice to hear from you. Yeah, it seems like whenever I do a 50K, I'm coming off a bout of sickness. The last time, the thing was, well, I did the IC 8, but the 50K where I ran 626 a couple of years ago was a Seashore Nature Trail. And I had tonsillitis that week, and it was just coming off of it before I drove down for the race. And even those were miserable conditions. But I think there's something to be said for resting your legs. I don't know. Maybe I just focused on getting to the finish line. I really did have a good time during that race. The down there was pretty fun. So I appreciate the email, Sean. I really do. Let's see. Heard from Mike over at Dirt Dogs Running Diatribe. And we exchange emails all the time. He had a real good show on the Blue Ridge Marathon. If you want to check out his podcast, just search Dirt Dog Podcast, DAWG. You'll find it. Just put it in your favorite search engine. He said that I probably had the perfect storm for the PR and my 50K with rest of being sick, high mileage, and then those hard-boiled eggs. Hard-boiled eggs don't have any. They have like less than a gram of carbohydrates, but they have a lot of protein. And for me, it's something kind of dense that's in my stomach that I can kind of get that seems to just kind of make me feel like I'm a little fuller. He said that my training's got me in a position to get to the starting line of prime shape. And he's going to be running the Blue Ridge Marathon, which is in April. I think it's the same weekend as the Railroad Run or the week before. And Mike's going to do a double. So I can't wait to hear all about that. And Mike, appreciate you sending the email. I'm very much looking forward to reading about your double marathon there. Heard from Tom on the website at ashlanddave.podbean.com, and he was down at the Charlotte 50K. I was real sad that I didn't get a chance to meet him. I just totally overlooked that. And he was checking in to see how the Graveyard 100 training was going. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Chris's post on the website. I got a little confused here. But yeah, Tom, next time I'm down that way, if you're still listening to the podcast, I'll definitely let you know. And I did see you a ton on the out and backs because you guys were running in the ponchos, which is probably something that I probably should have been doing, no doubt about it. So anyway, I'm really sorry I missed you down there. I mean, I can picture you in my mind right now running with your friend there in the ponchos. Also heard from Chris comment on, oh, good. His website is runningafterdaylight.blogspot.com. And Tom's is mastercompetitor.blogspot.com. So check his out, too. No doubt about that. Let's see. Backing up a little bit with Chris's, he ran the Callaway Gardens Marathon and then ran 7 to 8 miles after that for good measure. He ran that a little bit faster than he wanted to. He's posted this about 2 weeks away from his Iron Horse 100, which is what he just completed on the 18th. And it's just, that's just incredible, Chris. I can't wait to read your report because I'm going to definitely talk about that in the podcast once you get it. Heard from Tom. He was the one in the, he's running. Okay. Tom again, this is Tom from Charlotte. He is, running the Oak Mountain 50K in Alabama on March 31st. So Tom, I wish you all the best on that, and drop me a line. Let me know how you did, cause I'm definitely curious. And heard from Christina, and I wrote her an email telling her there was some static in last week's show because she had written me one time saying that the sound was kind of weird on the podcast. Because we've got a new mic on the MacBook Pro, but I'm not really sure where it is on the computer. It's clearly more sensitive than our previous laptop, which was the iBook. And I think what she was hearing was I was dragging some paper over it, and that's where the static was heard. So I'm trying not to touch anything right now, Christina, while I'm doing the podcast. I'm not even going to turn the page of my notebook here where I write down some notes. I'm not even sure if I have anything on the other side. I just wrote down some titles to some books. So, I think that's where that came from. And she said she never really noticed the loud paper noises from the podcast. So, anyway, thanks for checking in. I really appreciate that. I think I solicited that email from her. Heard from Chris again. And let's see. I want to talk about Tom's IC8 and the other race that he did. I'll have to check here in a second. Let's see. I'm going back through Chris's emails, and I'll tell you. All right, he's saying 2 more weeks. Yeah. All right, Chris, I got to get away from your emails here so I can finish up the podcast. Okay, let's look at Tom's Willis River 50K. This was back in January 14th. Let's see. He ran 6:02. Rodney ran 6:06, which was they finished better than last year. He said it was pretty much around the freezing mark. He wore shorts. Rodney wore long pants. There was a lot. The trails were really muddy. And he says he always likes watching the new trail runners that tiptoe around the mud at the beginning of the race. And then by the third time through, they were just running right through it. And then he and Rodney stayed together most of the day. They got off the trail a few times. He said it was funny how you go through the ups and downs during an ultra. Sometimes he had trouble hanging on to Rodney's pace. Other times he could tell Rodney was struggling. He was hoping to break 6 hours, so with about 2 miles to go, he went ahead of Rodney, but he didn't have a whole lot left, and some of the little hills near the end just kind of did him in, and he couldn't break 6 hours. He came in at 6:02. I know that course is a lot hillier than the one that I ran down in Charlotte, which is basically flat, but I have to say I do have a little bit of satisfaction knowing that I beat Tom Grant's time in a 50K, even though the terrain on mine was a lot easier. I'm just kidding with you, Tom. But anyway, he said he set a personal record for hitting the ground. He fell 5 times, and Rodney stayed on his feet the entire time. And then it looks like 2 weeks later, they went out and did the Icy 8, which is an 8-hour adventure trail run on February 4th. That might have been 3 weeks later. The goal in this race, I did this last year, and this was the same day as the Charlotte Ultra, so I wasn't able to participate. But the goal is to run as many miles on the two loops, which one is 8 miles and then the other is 4.7 miles. You try to do that in 8 hours. So you have to kind of plan your times to make the most of the 8 hours. I remember last year I think I finished in 7 hours and 20 minutes or something, and there was just no time. I couldn't run 4.7 miles in that mud in 40 minutes. But the short loop has fewer hills. Looks like it's a little longer. And then they had a transition area. They were able to get in, let's see, I can't find in the email how many miles they got, but I think Rodney got about 36 miles, and Tom was right around that. So, and they said it was just totally muddy. And Tom did 37.6 miles, Rodney did 36.2. And then they were with a guy named Rob, who probably hadn't run 10 miles all year, according to Tom, and he got in 34 miles. That's pretty amazing. I appreciate those race reports, Tom. Sorry I didn't really do them justice. I got a little behind on the podcast this week, and I wasn't quite able to scan the emails and pull out the stuff that I wanted to as much. So that's pretty much it for this week. I'm finally falling back, tapering. Taper period, 2 weeks to go, which means only a couple 5 milers this week, and it just an 18 miler on the weekend. And then I'm not sure if this week is a rest day on Sunday. I think it might be. I've been doing Saturday-Sunday runs pretty much every weekend, with the exception of the 50K race. It was the only Sunday I had off. And I'm getting my body. It's amazing how your body adapts to just getting out there, even after putting down a long training run. You know, your body can get back out there the next day. The whole goal is, of course, run on tired legs when you're depleted. I'm just hoping that running in the dark and doesn't do me in. I need to get. I think what I'm going to do with the 18 miler is probably do a night run or do something. I got to do something to test out my headlamp. One thing I noticed about the Black Diamond headlamp is because I was curious to know if it's going to last all night. You know, it's going to be dark from, I'm guessing, 7 at night till, you know, 6 in the morning. So that's 11 hours. So I need a headlamp that's going to last that long. You have to turn the bulb brightness down in order to get it to last longer. And I finally figured out how to do that. I had to read the directions. And so, Greg, Dr. Smitty, I haven't heard from you in a while. We haven't exchanged any emails. But I wonder, did you know that about that Black Diamond? It looks like you have to hold it on, wait 3 seconds, and then hold the button down, and you can see where the brightness will dim. And so that's what I'm going to do in order to get that headlamp to last all night. Plus, I'll have a backup. And the backup will have extra batteries. I got so much stuff I got to put on my list. I guess I should probably start doing that. I can't believe this race is 2 weeks away. Okay, well, that's the podcast for this week. I will be back in 10 days to 2 weeks with the next show, which will be episode 150. Gosh, hard to believe I've had 150. I'm up on show 150. What if I get to 200? I guess I will at some point in time. I don't know what the topic will be for that one, but I'll come up with something. Hopefully that will be interesting, and hopefully I'll get some more emails. You can reach me, dashlanddave@gmail.com, and I try to reply to all emails in a timely manner. Sometimes it's tough because I've got this race director thing going, which totally clogs up my inbox. It's just you know, email after email, response. There's so much to do on that. It's just, you know, and we got it broken down by month, and we got another race committee meeting tomorrow night, so I guess we'll see where we are. But go to HanoverArts.org and go down to on the right hand side and click on the link to the railroad run and check it out. Or go to raceit.com and just type in railroad in the search box, and you'll find some information about the race. So if you happen to be in the Ashland, Virginia area on April 21st. You can sign up on race day. Can't be guaranteed a shirt, but we'd love to have you. And we're keeping our fingers crossed for good weather. So, all right, well, this is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. And don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.
The 2012 Ashland Railroad Run. From Race the Rail in Ashland, Virginia. Join us on Saturday, April 21st for the 34th annual running of one of Virginia's oldest road races alongside the Jackson through the historic town of Ashland, Virginia. The center of the universe. The certified 10K race is a favorite spring ritual among runners from around the Commonwealth and beyond. It's great for setting a PR. There's also a 5K fun run and a 1 mile kids race. The kids race has cool prizes. Join hundreds of your friends and come to the center of the universe on April 21st and race the rail. If you're lucky, you might be able to run alongside a huge moving train. For more information, go to HanoverArts.org or email ashlanddave@gmail.com. You can also go to raceit.com and type railroad in the search box. I was a 5K marshal last year, and it was fun. Run Ashland first. See you there.